Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 198 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. You're joined by, well, me, Al, and by my good friend, Anton. Hello, Anton.
Hello, I'm the aforementioned Anton, and sadly, our esteemed colleague, Mike, is slightly squashbuckling this week.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's not really sadly, he's having the whale of time. He's currently sailing the seven seas as a gentleman pirate. He's having adventures and attempting to emulate his newfound hero, Steed Bonnet. And if you don't know who Steed Bonnet is, then go dig out the iPlayer and watch something called Our Flag Means Death. And then picture Mike doing that, because that's what he's doing.
I'm very sad. I haven't been doing any squashbuckling since the Wii U days. It's been quite a while, I would say. But nevertheless, we've got a fun show this week. How have you been doing, Al?
I've been doing all right. Not too badly at all. I've been playing a lot of Switch this week, but only one game. I've been playing a lot more Sports Story. I think I may be nearing the end of it, but I'm really not 100% sure because it sort of keeps going. But I think I've done almost all of the sports that they've asked so far, but I do still have one question mark beside one of the sports, which I think might turn out to be jousting, but I have no idea. Not a clue.
Haven't encountered any game-breaking bugs, however.
Game-breaking, no. I have got stuck a few times and had to turn the game off and reload it when the character has managed to walk sort of between some tables and then you turn around trying to come back out and you're stuck. And just like, oh. And there was the tennis glitch, which I mentioned a few weeks ago, and I got in touch with the developer and went, just reporting these two bugs. One was a minecart flying across the screen, nowhere near any rails. Another was this tennis one where the trainer calls out shots and you've got to hit back the right shots. And interestingly, for anyone else that's playing this, the developer wrote back saying, oh, you've got to hit the same shot correctly three times and then they'll call out the next one. I was like, okay. So I just kept mashing the right button over and over again, and after returning about 12 to 15 of the correct shot, it finally registered three of them. And then after that, it's a different shot, and the rest of them all got registered perfectly. It was just that first one. I just had to keep mashing and keep hitting it until eventually it decided that it was going to register three shots, and after that, I got through it.
Oh, excellent. So progress can be made. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. I'm enjoying the story. It's a good, fun game. It's just got these annoying little glitches in it. What about you? Have you played much, and you're going to say Tetris again, aren't you?
I am, but don't worry. I have been playing Tetris 99, but I played a new one. I have borrowed the whole arcade machine from the internet. Tetris the Grandmaster, I've been playing that on Steam Deck. It's touted as like the hardest version of Tetris ever, which is disappointing because clearly I'm not good enough because right now it's just regular Tetris. I presume it gets harder. I haven't gone that far, which considering how much Tetris I have been playing, I should be good at it, but somehow, alas, I am not.
Maybe you are exceedingly good at it and you just don't know how good you are, which is why you're finding it not that difficult, because it's insane for everyone else. You're just at that Zen level already.
Oh, it's like you with Fall Guys, just a natural pro. Look at that.
That's the one. That's exactly what it is. Just don't talk yourself down, Anton. You have amazing Tetris skills, honed finely through years and years of practice.
Oh, why, thank you. I think the main challenge, however, this week has been working with our website stuff. As mentioned on the last website, I was like, the website's giving me a headache. And that's basically because the system we use, Squarespace, our website's built on an old enough version of it where they're like, if you want to move to the new version, you have to make a duplicate site entirely from scratch within the 14-day trial, then move everything over. I haven't done that, and I probably won't for a little bit. However, what I have done this week has been over the website and given it a fresh coat of paint, basically put a big old bandage in it because it was a little bit rusty in a couple corners, but it's cleaned up now. So if you're interested in visiting, that is nsukp.co.uk. The homepage has been updated. We have a new media player that's kind of got a couple new features like better UI. You can kind of skip ahead 30 seconds and back 10 seconds. You can change the speed of the podcast if that's your thing. There's also like 5 episodes on the main page. It's also been updated with all, I guess, 198 episodes of the podcast. The specials are on there. The Patreon page has been updated. The episode page is all in one and a lot more streamlined. And yeah, I think our beautiful faces have been rearranged slightly on the host page. Let us know if there's any features you want to see over there. it's kind of getting up to date. It's basically making it, you know, up to date, contemporary, up to snuff with everything we're doing. And yeah, we've got that new Patreon page, which outlines the kind of modern version of the Patreon we've got. As we've mentioned a bazillion times before, £2 per month comes out to about 24 a year. You get access to the Patreon RSS feed where you can add it to your podcast apps and, you know, stream all of the exclusives there, such as the main show without adverts. You can't stream the live recordings, but you can get access to the live recordings as a Patreon. You can listen to our bonus show, Last Call, also in the RSS feed, so you don't have to actually log into the Patreon website at all. You can basically sign up, get this RSS feed, and then listen on your app of choice. There's also live recordings of Last Call. You can get early access to show notes, get access to our wonderful Discord community, which is always quite exciting to see what people are chatting about this week. Shout out woohoos when you join, our personal friend codes, and of course, but least, far from least, eternal gratitude.
And there's much of that. It's lovely. I get so excited when somebody signs up for the Discord, because it's just... it's vindication, and maybe vindication is the wrong word, but it's just proof that what we're doing is enjoyable to people, and that's lovely, and, you know, keeps us going. Otherwise, we would probably have jacked this in a very long time ago. Go check out Anton's hard work. I have to say, I've never thought about people listening to us on different speeds before. Let me know if you listen to us on half speed, or if you listen to us sped up.
Yeah, it's amazing. I know so many people that listen to podcasts like exclusively on high speeds, which I do that with audiobooks. So I wonder, like, if you hear our normal voices, is it just uncanny now if you've like listened to us at high speed for like a couple episodes? Are we just a slow version of our podcast, Al?
It's awesome. Either way, that's cool. So go check out Anton's new website. He has been a busy boy, and at some point he might build a whole new one on the new platform, but I'm not gonna hold him to that anytime soon. I might even give you a hand.
Yeah, it's kind of like an interesting one where it would be better and we could make it look better, especially for mobile stuff. It would be good. My kind of work website is on the new platform. It's absolutely brilliant. But right now, the website's good. It's got everything you'd want on there. And it's quite fun to be able to just skim through like 200 episodes of the podcast. Had to rejig the RSS feed to make that all work elegantly. So if you're on the main feed, you'll also get the thumbnails for the first time. So hopefully that is not too scary.
Ooh, that's exciting. Well, that's quite good fun. Yay! Because I use an RS. I use Overcast to catch all my pods. And funnily enough, I catch our pods, so I can make sure every so often I listen to it, make sure it still sounds all right and we're not broken anything. So that's kind of good to know and get the proper thumbnails instead of just the generic NSUKP.
You know, it would be amazing that, you know, like 4 years ago, like we just like started uploading static. Everybody's just been lying to us that we actually make a show. It's just a live audience.
It would probably be better than what we put out, my friend.
Ah, the burns, the tea.
Anyway, we should probably move on actually to your show and talk about some Nintendo news from this week.
Tell us what people want to know.
So first up, Visual Concept have announced LEGO 2K Drive. It's a racing game for Nintendo Switch published by 2K Games. The game's going to be released on May the 19th and we priced it $49.99. Now, pretty sure the best way to describe this is, I think, Forza Horizon in LEGO. Is that how you categorise this? From what I've seen, that's how I think this game is going to be going.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me of that Horizon DLC, but it's very exciting because we've had a lot of these karting-style games, and at the end of the day, you know, they're Mario Kart plus Y, plus X. You know, it's a variation of Mario Kart. However, this is one where I'm looking at it, it's like, okay, we've got like a friendly car-esque racer here, but it doesn't remind me of Mario Kart. It feels like its own thing as kind of a youthful beginner arcade racer. I'm very excited to see this. The custom car creation looks fun, slight destructible environments a la LEGO City Undercover. Love to see it. I wish more LEGO games had that destructibility to that scale. I was very impressed. This is a very polished product they put out that feels, you know, doesn't feel like it's stepping on the toes of many other games, which in a genre as long running as the racing game genre is hard to do.
So is it track based or is it open world? Because when I first heard about it, I thought it was track based. And then having watched the release trailer, everything in that looked like it was entirely open world and I can't decide what it is.
I'm kind of with you. I'm not too sure how they're doing it. I believe you can kind of transform your Lego creations, because there was elements of Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed where you're going from like boat to car.
Ooh, I think the jury's out. It is indeed. It is open world. I found an explanation from a hands-on. It is indeed an open world. So it is very much Horizon, but for Lego. Or purely in Lego. And it looks awesome and funny and witty. It is going to have, I'm going to say microtransactions, that's maybe the wrong word. They have confirmed that real money can be spent in the game, and it's going to be very carefully controlled to make sure that kids don't go, you know, spending all their parents' cash. But I don't think I have a problem with that, so long as it's in the same vein as other racing games like, you know, Forza, GTA, where you can buy car packs and that kind of stuff. As long as it's not pay to win, and I don't think this is looking like it's going to be pay to win. There's a 15-hour campaign in it, so that's kind of the more important bit to me. I don't really care about multiplayer bits, but I presume other people do.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking this will be a similar monetization structure to like the 2K wrestling and basketball games, where, you know, they're not great, but they're not EA level. So I don't know if that's something we should be happy about, but I'm sure if you're just playing it solo, there'll be plenty of meat on the bones of this title.
I love it. It's not great, but it's not EA.
Put that on the
awesome
box.
Yeah, that's quote of the day right there. Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about Fury Studios have announced, I'm not gonna lie, a very beautiful looking and awesome sounding game called Kingdom 80s Summer of Greed, a side-scrolling strategy game for the Nintendo Switch published by Raw Fury. It's coming out at some point in 2023. This is a series of games. Kingdom Games. They're like MicroStrategy series. So this is the latest in sort of the series, but this one is very much a standalone game in its own little world. It's got nothing to do with any of the ones that have come before, and it just looks so good. This beautiful pixel art blended with what I can only describe as amazing lighting and reflections, and just, it's gorgeous, Anton.
Indeed, and I just love the audacity of taking a traditionally fantasy franchise, taking some refined, established gameplay, and then kind of putting it in a different setting. As somebody that hates fantasy, this is a nice treat. I get to explore something new, and I think what they've put together here looks polished, refined, and, you know, not something I've seen outside of the fantasy genre. So, a delightful addition by Raw Fury.
Yeah, and it's very, very much hitting on the 80s nostalgia, pop culture stuff. I mean, in the trailer alone, we've seen a hoverboard from Back to the Future. We've seen E.T. or an E.T. type thing riding in the basket of a bicycle. It gives you very, very definite, what's it called? Stranger Things vibes. It's just nail on the head. It has gripped me like no game I've seen in a while has gripped me. I really want to play this. It looks excellent.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Indeed, a fantastic addition to our established franchise.
Cool. Next up, Limbo Lane Games have announced Smile For Me. I mean, it's described as a point-and-click adventure game for the Switch, published by Serenity Forge, being released in spring, and it's going to cost £12. But really, nothing I can say describes this game or does it justice. It is bat beep crazy. It is just weird. It's a point-and-click. The only thing you can do is nod your head or shake your head, which sounds straightforward enough, but go watch the trailer. It is mind-bending and so confusing, and has a puppet narrator and cut out characters like sort of Paper Mario-esque characters in a sort of quasi 3D world, and the whole thing is just so confusing. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, I was enamored by the trailer we've seen of this game so far. It reminds me of the game design of Art School, which we've got a review for up on our YouTube channel, and the kind of storytelling of the Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared series on YouTube. It is just bizarre, creepy. You know, it's nothing about this trailer screams horror, but it's just uncanny enough that I'm like, they're going to pull something out in the third act. I know it.
Yeah, there's something very, very weird going on. I mean, you may well play this on PC. It came out in 2019 on PC, and it's got a pretty cult following. It's done very, very well. So it's one that completely missed my attentions. I'd never heard of it until it got announced here. But yeah, definitely creepy vibes. There's a physical edition coming too, by the way. It comes with a load of, you know, stickers and cool stuff if you're into that kind of stuff.
So if, you know, the game's not scary enough, you can throw at your friends.
Exactly. Next up, I will try and pronounce their names correctly, but forgive me because I won't. Pixel have announced Xiaomi The Flame Dragon's Fist. It's a 16-bit brawler on the Switch, published by Leofull. It's releasing on the 31st of March, coming out at $13.49. Again, this is an existing franchise. It's been around, but this is the first one I think we've had in the West. And it looks so snazzy. Or Mega Drive-y, but I'm going to go snazzy because, you know, that's my background. It's kind of awesome, and I quite like the fact that the female protagonist in this just looks like she's kicking backside left, right, and center. She is cool.
Indeed. It is just very authentic of the 16-bit era. What I quite liked is, it sounds dumb, but it felt more Mega Drive-y than it was snazzy. I know, heresy.
I can understand what you mean. I do get that.
Yeah, it was giving me like Double Axe or Golden Axe vibes. There was just something about it. The soundtrack, especially. Oh, that was a good soundtrack. Like, you could probably run that soundtrack on a Mega Drive and it would be a god-tier Mega Drive soundtrack.
Well, do you know why that soundtrack was amazing?
How come?
Because it was composed by, Norio Nagata, who is the composer for Namco, who did Zombie Nation, Isolated Warriors, Genpei Toma Den, and then the sound effects are also done by Sega sound designer Hirofumi Murasaki, who did Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master, Clockwork Knight, and Daytona 2001. So yes, there's a bit of pedigree behind the sound there, which is probably why it sounded awesome.
Indeed, and to be honest, it was a huge part of it. I was like, you know what? You can only get so much of how a game feels in terms of, you know, just how fun it is from looking at a trailer. There's only so much you can gauge before you need to get in your hands. But the sound, you can get the full experience. So I was so sold on the soundtrack. I'm like, you know what? They've sold me on the quality of this title. There's a lot in here. I'm intrigued.
You're right, actually. When you say there's a lot in here, it does look like there's a lot of content. Because from what I've gathered, there's the main story. And then halfway through the trailer, it sort of says, play as her sister after you experience the journey and beat the game again. So I don't know if it's a totally different story or if it's the same story with a different character, but either way, there's a lot of playability. So it's kind of cool. I like these things when they come out. They are always a bit of fun. Next one, I feel like Grumpy Al's on the periphery. He's not walked through the door. Grumpy Al has not walked through the door. He's still in the hall. But Big Blue Bubble have announced Little Friends Puppy Island, a simulation game for the Nintendo Switch, coming out Q3 of this year and being published by Fireshine Games. Now, the trailer does look kind of cute. I'm not going to lie. Reminds me a bit of Nintendogs, because the whole idea is, you know, you're raising a puppy. But I sort of get the impression that this is a very, very shallow game with very little in it that looks okay and is probably just trying to take people's money and doesn't deserve it. That's my impression. Please tell me I'm wrong.
I think you're very possibly on the money here. You know, it is nice to see representation for a missions genre on Nintendo Switch, which is amazing because we've had almost all the Nintendo first party, but we haven't had Nintendogs plus Cats yet. But I won't lie, it, you know, rather than filling that missing spot in my heart in the way that, you know, the Fast Racing RX, you know, filled my F-Zero hole in my heart, this one just makes me want a Nintendogs more. It's just missing something here, which is really disappointing to see.
Did you ever play a Nintendogs?
I didn't. I was knees deep in my PSP at that point.
Yeah, I never played it as well, but I know it was a big hit and people loved it. I don't know what it was that people loved about it. Maybe this has everything. I just looked at this and went, eh. I mean, they have a big deal in the trailer about the fact they've got 9 breeds of dog. It doesn't seem like a lot of breeds of dog to me. I'm sure there's many more out there, and it can't be that hard to program in a few different skins and maybe a couple of different bits of behaviour. It just felt a bit half-hearted to me.
Yeah, and it's, I think especially because I believe we've had a little friends on Nintendo Switch already, so, you know, I just kind of wish they, you know, focused in on the quality of this one, but it kind of just looks a little bit cheap, sadly.
Yeah, all right, well, let's move on to one that I think is probably going to make you quite excited. In fact, I'll probably just announce it, step back, and then let's let you geek out. Sega have announced Sonic Origins Plus, a self-published bundle of 16 classic games featuring new playable characters and physical editions for the Nintendo Switch. The game is going to be released on June 23rd. Anton, feel free to just express your joy and happiness. Off you go.
So, my opinions on this are very much similar to the original Origins when it launched, where very happy with what they've given here. You know, having all of these games from the Game Gear, fantastic. Having a physical edition now, fantastic. But like the original Origins, I'm just like, you could have went a little further, which is a bit of a shame. Like, you know, it's great to have all these Mega Drive games, but the Master System versions of all these games were slightly better ports, so it would have been nice to have those for the games that had those ports. And similarly, there's just a couple games now that will just fall through the cracks where it's like, why not Knuckles Chaotix? You know, that would be nice. Or, you know, Sonic Spinball, you know, it doesn't really cost them anything to chuck in the Mega Drive version. So a little bit disappointed there that, you know, there's other titles they could have added. They could have added
which
the Master System.
Which one did you say you weren't getting?
Sorry?
Which one did you say you were missing? Was it Sonic Spinball?
Sonic Spinball, we've got the Game Gear version, but not the Mega Drive version. Same with Mean Bean Machine. And then a couple of the kind of early Game Gear ones, like 1-2, Triple Trouble. We've got the Game Gear version rather than the Master System. And then there's just other Sonic games that I feel like would have been nice as of a classic collection, like Knuckles Chaotix and stuff. So a little disappointing that they didn't go the maximum, like they didn't go all out, but I'm happy with what we've got here. Everything in here is solid, and for new players or new people to the Sonic franchise, it's going to be a definitive collection, and you're going to be able to play some kind of still very obscure games.
Absolutely. I have to say, I'm reading through the press release at the moment, and I'm so confused about the different game editions and what you're getting in them. I think they're largely the same, but the physical edition is coming with a 20-page art book, a reversible cover with never-before-seen art. And I think it's the same as everything else. So you're getting the main game, 12 Game Gear games emulated and playable in the museum, Classic Amy as a playable character in Sonic the Hedgehog 1, 2, 3 and Sonic CD, Knuckles as a playable character in Sonic CD, and then all previously released Sonic Origins downloadable content. Presume that means something to you.
Yeah, so they basically, due to copyright reasons, when they did the Sonic Origins, they had like a music bonus pack for all of the stuff that basically Michael Jackson owned. So you could get that as a DLC, or you can now get it as part of this Plus collection, which is very nice. It's nice to see that we finally got this Plus collection, especially as a physical, because I've been holding off and we'll enjoy everything that's in here. Just wish there was more.
I'm intrigued. There's one thing I do want to ask you about this. So we've got dollar pricing at the moment. So if you want to just get the expansion for the original game to bring it up to the Plus, it's going to cost you $9.99. Fair enough. If you want to get the digital edition, it's going to cost you $39.99 for the whole pack. If you want to get the physical edition with the 20-page art book, it's going to cost you $39.99. Why are they the same price when you're getting more for the physical and the physical? That's really irritating me. Charge more or charge less. Don't charge the same.
Yeah, it's interesting. I won't lie, one of the reasons that I didn't opt to buy them twice, like I did with Sonic Mania, was mainly that Sonic Origins is very expensive. It's like double the price of Mania, and Mania was like a whole new video game. So, yeah, I think there's something weird going on in the price, and maybe they felt they couldn't get away with charging even more for the physical version of basically 16-bit games at retail, which I don't think they should. But yeah, I think maybe the kind of base Origins experience is maybe due a little bit of a dip in price.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Steel Wool Studios have announced Five Nights at Freddy's Security Breach, another survival horror game for the Switch coming out. We haven't actually got a release date for it yet, but it's been published by Scott Games. The Five Nights at Freddy's games, I've not played in them because they all look terrifying and freaky, but we're getting another edition, Anton.
Indeed, and if you're not familiar, Security Breach is a wild departure for the franchise, released, I believe, last year for PlayStation 5. And takes you from the security room and puts you into a kind of semi-open world, kind of amusement park casino-esque place. It's basically the, you know, deluxe version of a Chuck E. Cheese, but just huge in Security Breach. And as a game, from what I saw in the Let's Plays, you know, it had some rough edges, but had a lot of meat on its bones, you know, continuing to pour ideas and content into the established Five Nights at Freddy mythology. It's a lot of game in there.
So there you go. Moving on. I'm going to butcher this name as well. You may correct me if I get it wrong. I don't know. I've never actually heard this person's name read out before, and they've never seen it written down in credits of games. Eiji Aonuma. And if you don't know who that is, they are the producer of the Legend of Zelda series. They have been talking and shared a comment about the upcoming sequel, saying to Famitsu, Tears of the Kingdom will have... He said that the game will feature new gameplay that will bring about changes to the game world, and that players' imaginations will be free to explore those changes. And that's all he said. It was all very cryptic, and the internet is going crazy about what does it mean? Are we going to be like Minecraft building things? Are we going to be sculpting things? Is it just building vehicles? What do you think, Anton?
Yeah, you know, I could see the creation elements that they've demonstrated with, you know, making vehicles. I could see that going so far. You know, it would just open the game so much. You know, they spent more time making this game, primarily based on Breath of the Wild, than they did making Breath of the Wild. So they could have anything in this title. It's very exciting to see. Now, usually when we make the show notes for this podcast, we usually go from Sunday to Sunday, as that's the normal recording time, and we try not to add too much to the show because, you know, it breaks or takes away from the next show if that happens on time, if we're a little bit late with the main show. But they did announce today, Al, that they're doing a 10-minute gameplay premiere for Tears of the Kingdom tomorrow.
Oh, that's exciting. Is that a time that's viewable in the UK, or is it while we're all asleep in our beds? Do you know?
I think it's actually a decent time tomorrow. I think it's maybe 2 off the top of my head.
Interesting. Oh, we can tune in tomorrow and find out actually what they want to tell us. And will they keep anything back, or will they show us everything? Because I sort of feel with Breath of the Wild, we sort of saw everything that we needed to see to know exactly what the game was going to be in all the demos before the game came out. And then when we got the game, it was wonderful and brilliant. But there were no big surprises. It was just exactly what it said it was going to be. And I get the impression that this one could be just fine if they do exactly the same thing. They show us a nice little gameplay trailer, they show us all these new mechanics, and then you go away and you implement them through the game to progress. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it really depends on how steep of a learning curve I think they want to give you. Because I think if they want to have it be as elegant of a learning experience as we had with Breath of the Wild, you know, stripping you back down to like core fundamentals, you know, they're just not going to be able to do that, you know, just showing you all up front. But because, you know, they'll have to wait, you know, teach you everything they taught you in Breath of the Wild and then add this additional stuff on top of that. Or they could keep you kind of a little bit more OP, or kind of speed up that learning process and then give you the cool stuff up front. It's going to be an interesting balance they'll have to strike.
Yeah, can't wait to see. And let's not forget, in one of the very first trailers we saw Link basically falling through a rock in the sky. So, you know, there's stuff we haven't really seen since. I mean, that was in that very first trailer. And they've not really, I don't think, made much of a deal of that. Am I wrong?
Not really. They haven't really explained the mechanics at all, you know. It's all just been people interpreting what they've shown, you know, being like, is it phasing through objects? Is it rewinding time? Is it fast-forwarding time? You know, we haven't quite got an understanding of what all these mechanics will be, so it's going to be interesting if this gameplay tomorrow is little snippets from all the, you know, many, many hours long playtime, whether or not it is just the first 10-minute chunk, or if it's going to be like a 10-minute chunk in the middle of the game. I believe when they showed off Breath of the Wild, they just did the first like 10 minutes at the beginning and was like, there you go, yeah. And then watch the trailer.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I can see them doing that again, potentially. But we saw everything we needed to see in that first 10 minutes. So we'll know next week. Tune in for our show next week to find out what they told us and what we think of it. But either way, it's very, very cool. Up next, Atari has made an odd acquisition, I would have said. They have gone and bought Night Dive Studios. Now, they are the team that ported games like Turok and Doom 64 and Quake and System Shock. All first-person shooters. Atari hasn't really got many of them in their library. In fact, to the point where I went to look to see how many first-person shooters they have, and according to the Atari database, they have Doom, Wolfenstein 3D, and Dimension X. And that's it. So why have they bought this team, Anton?
Your bewilderment is exactly the same as I share. They're not really a team that has too much to show. They are currently in the development of a System Shock remake, which, to be honest, is not the most ground-up remake in the planet. It feels very much similar to the work that they did on kind of some of their later kind of ports, such as Quake. I don't really know what Atari would need from them. Even stepping out of first-person shooters, their Atari Jaguar releases, the 3D ones, there's not very many in there that need the porting job. And I think the ones that are worth playing have had ports as of the Atari 50th collection. So clearly just wanting the talent here. Maybe putting them to some original titles or wanting to see what they can maybe interpret or kind of do with some old IP.
Or maybe they're going to go out and buy some more companies that they'll then want to port. I mean, it seems odd buying this team first, but maybe it's just part of a plan and just the way it's come about. But that's what I was thinking. Are they going out acquiring more game studios with the games that they want to port, so they've got this porting team already now because it's just the way the commercials worked? Maybe. It's the only thing that makes any sense to me, but I'm rarely right about these things, more often than not wrong. So who knows? Very weird.
You know, there might be, because I believe the current incarnation of Atari owns some IP back from the Infogrames days. So I'm trying to think what they own, because they're mainly a company that did third-party games. Like, they did the, like, I believe Simpsons Hit and Run was an Infogrames product. So I don't really know what's in the IP vault of Infogrames. There might be stuff in there that's worth Atari reinterpreting for the modern day.
Who knows? Watch this space, because frankly, that's all we can say. There is nothing more we can do other than speculate and just see what happens from this very bizarre acquisition. D4 Enterprises, they have revealed that they will be bringing games from the online digital storefront, Project Egg, to the Nintendo Switch. The Project Egg library is largely comprised of MSX, PC98 and PC88 games, and if you don't know what those are, then you need to become a patron and go listen to the old prequel episodes. Have we done prequel episodes on all of those, or just some of them?
Definitely not PC 98 and 88. We may have done an MSX episode.
Right? Yeah, thought so. Yeah.
But yeah, nevertheless, I imagine for a lot of our, you know, Western listeners, there's probably not too much value in here. These are, from my experience, the Project Egg library is very, very, very niche Japanese titles. So a lot of the stuff, especially for it being on PC as of its time, very text heavy. So there might not be the most value here for most of us, sadly.
Well. Tis news nonetheless. And that brings us to the end of our main news section and brings us neatly into turbo mode.
Yes.
As usual, I will fly through some stories and then you can give me your 2 cents on them afterwards. Here we go. Deep breath. Super Mario World hacker and researcher Codfish1002 has fixed the corrupted graphics of Map B, a Super Mario World prototype map in the GigaLeak that was created way back in 1989. Stephen Ferreira, the director of Apex Legends, has shared in an interview with GamesIndustry.biz that they believe the Apex franchise could be around for another 15 years or more. Peppa Pig World Adventures features a tribute to Queen Elizabeth II. May she rest in peace. Twitcher streamer GV_Mimi, M-I-M-I, is working to beat The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild using a custom-made Ocarina controller. Lord of the Rings Golem has been given a release date of May 25th, but the Switch version has been released later. Sonic Frontiers has had a new update released, the Sight, Sounds and Speed update, which adds a jukebox, photo mode, challenge mode and battle rush mode. Some Amazon delivery boxes have been given the Super Mario treatment and have turned into yellow question mark blocks instead of the usual brown cardboard box, and they look cool. Lush has launched a line of kind of cosmetics, bath products, let's call them bath products, themed around Super Mario Brothers movies. Nintendo has patented the design of the destroyed Master Sword from the new Legend of Zelda, and finally Disney Speedstorm is getting a competitive regulated multiplayer, which is also interesting. Anton, what do you want to pull out and chat about?
Oh yes, the Lush collab with the new Super Mario Bros. Movie is quite fun to see. Lush aren't really a brand that does tie-ins in that way, so I imagine some big bucks were spent to get that deal put in place. It is quite fun to see the game similar with that, the Amazon tie-in with the packaging. I think the only time I've seen that was with either the Grand Tour or the kind of Rings of Power, in terms of them like marketing on their boxes.
What did I miss? I don't think I saw that. Or maybe I did and just forgot all about it. Was it just the words stuck in the box?
It was just the words stuck on the box, which is still a lot cheaper than, you know, these bright yellow question mark blocks that we've got for this one. So again, the Nintendo marketing machine must have paid a lot of money for that. And yeah, I found the comments about the Apex Legends franchise a bit bewildering. A lot of people are like, oh my god, the Apex Legends franchise, like 15 years. I'm like, maybe if you were saying the game is going to be around for 15 years, that sounds that's impressive, because, you know, it's hard to get a ongoing live service to last that long. A franchise, that feels achievable. Disappointed that they've forgotten that it's technically a Titanfall spinoff, but I guess Apex makes more money, so that makes sense. Sonic Frontiers, of course, warms a spot in my heart. Now I can take selfies, everything I've wanted, 10 out of 10.
Hooray! cool. You happy with that anymore?
I am. How about yourself? What jumped up to you this week?
Well, interestingly, different stories. Obviously, the Amazon box was really, really cool, but I'm really taken with the missing map from Super Mario Bros. Oh, missing is the wrong word. Super Mario World on the SNES. The researcher, I think he must have dug through the code, and basically there was an old corrupted file. It was just an image. It was a JPEG type thing. Just an image of a map from early, early development of Super Mario World. It was in the shape of a mushroom. It had a little route going through. It had some trees and some mushroom houses and a few things that ended up in other bits of the game. And curiously, instead of the little dots that we end up having in Super Mario World, this one was more akin to Super Mario 3 with little, you know, numbers on boxes when you went from level to level. And it's cool seeing that. I love the fact that someone's gone to all the effort of recreating a corrupted file, which has kind of pulled this missing bit of Nintendo history back into the light. It's now out there for the world to see. Otherwise, it would have been gone forever. I love that. Well done to the researcher that did that. I've forgotten their name. Codfish1002. So that was cool, and I'm intrigued by Nintendo patenting this new sword design. I can understand them having a copyright on sword design, you know, that kind of makes sense, but they've actually created a patent. They've also trademarked a really cool logo with the sword in the middle and sort of writing around about it, sort of I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, slightly crest-like.
Yeah, they've copyrighted this really cool logo. You can look it up. It looks awesome. I don't think it's going to give any spoilers because there's nothing in it that means anything to me anyway. But it looks really, really cool. But the fact they've put out a patent on the design of the sword makes you think, are they going to be making physical versions of this? Are they going to be doing something interesting? I don't know why they've done a patent. This one's confusing me.
Yeah, it really seems like from the very, very limited marketing material we have on this game that the Master Sword is going to be incredibly important to the story. And I'm excited to see how they do that, because You know, it's one thing to, you know, add new elements to an established franchise to take it in a new direction. You know, they could, very easily be like, welcome to the Zelda 2. Then John walked in and everything was different. No, they're working with the materials they've already got. They didn't add John. And I'm very happy that they're building on the established mythology in that way. Although, maybe John for Zelda 3, I don't know.
John for the win. Always with the Johns. John's exactly. Hands down. To be fair, John is one of my middle names.
Respectful. God love some Johns.
Absolutely. And that's it for the news. So it's probably about time that we headed over in the direction of Rumour Cafe.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
Let me just sit down here with my little rumour latte. What are you ordering us on?
Speculation cappuccino and one of our long-distant mug club mugs.
Wonderful. Well, lovely little callback there. I appreciate it. One rumour this week, but it's on one of our favourite topics. This week's rumour is, thanks to leaker Orexda, O-R-E-X-D-A, just go and interpret how you pronounce that yourself. We are to believe that the next generation of Nintendo console will use a 5-nanometer low-power chip. However, it's been brought to common knowledge that Atlan, the architecture intended for the next generation of NVIDIA Tegra chip, the Tegra's what's in the current Switch, if you don't know, has since been cancelled and replaced by something called Thor, an architecture targeting a 2025 release date. Now that sounds like bad news to me, Anton. That suggests we might not be getting a new Switch until 2025, and I hope that's not the case, because I don't think it could struggle on that long.
It is... possibly looking this way. So let's break this up into a couple chunks here. Idea of a Nintendo Switch running off a 5-nanometer low power chip makes tons of sense. Basically, when it comes down to kind of silicon that you put in computers, the smaller the nanometer basically means it will produce less heat, means you can clock it higher and it can be more efficient. Does mean they're slightly harder to make, but having a small chip, this is very, very small, absolutely brilliant. I don't know off the top of my head, but Switch time, I remember PCs were sitting at around about 15 nanometers. So this is a very efficient piece of silicon that it would be going for. And the two contenders, Atlan and Thor, are both 5-nanometer low power. Now, the leaker here in this case doesn't know if it's a case that the Nintendo Switch chip successor is going to be built on Atlan or Thor. The NVIDIA Tegra line of CPUs, or SoCs rather, were intended for kind of wide, you know, usage in mobile phones, tablets and the like. However, that was a plan that never really worked out for NVIDIA, as the space was so incredibly dominated by Snapdragon. So they've kind of not really known what to do with the line of products, and it seems like they're currently in the phase of pivoting towards creating chips for mobile vehicles, or kind of vehicles, I guess all vehicles are mobile, but cars basically is the main goal there. So it's unknowing if Atlan was in a state good enough for them to just spin it off for the Switch, because it seems like at this stage, whatever the Switch uses, it will be quite bespoke. Or if we're going to have to wait for one them to finish 4 and then to make a Nintendo Switch variant of 4 and release it.
Well, there's a little bit at the back of my brain that's saying a couple of months ago, 6 months ago maybe, we had a rumour that Nintendo were potentially getting in bed with another chip maker and that Tegra might not be the next chip anyway. I can't remember who that was, but we definitely had a conversation about them speaking to some other chip manufacturer for the Switch Pro. And actually, this would potentially add a bit of, you know, credence to that. If we're looking at 2025 for this Thor architecture to come out, and Nintendo did indeed want to get something out sooner, they might well be speaking to a third party and just shifting the entire basis. The downside to that, I guess, is that it's going to be very difficult to have backwards compatibility if you've got two completely different chip manufacturers with completely different chip architecture going in the background. Right?
I can't quite recall the conversations about them moving to a different manufacturer. They're in an odd situation where on the current Nintendo Switch, for titles like Nintendo Switch Sports and Splatoon 3, they have been using AMD technologies. Currently, AMD only creates x86 silicon, which is the kind of silicon you would expect in a PC rather than the mobile-like silicon that the Switch currently uses. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what Nintendo's plans are here, because just at the moment, there's not really somebody that's making ARM chips outside of Apple that are competitive with the likes of Xbox, PlayStation.
So many different options here. At the end of the day, I don't really have too strong an opinion who supplies the chip. I don't really care. All I want is a new Switch to be coming along soon, because every single passing day, the Switch is getting longer and longer and longer in the tooth. And okay, they're still extracting things from it. I fully expect Breath of the Wild to blow us away. But as the current generation of consoles, the Xbox 5 and PS5 and the Xbox Series X, they are getting more and more and more refined on a significantly increased platform from where the Switch is, and it is just leaving the Switch further and further in the dust. And then add to that, you've got the Steam Deck, which frankly kicks the Switch's backside in terms of its hardware and what it's capable of doing, and the Switch is just looking very long on the tooth. And that's even before we get into issues with Joy-Cons and all that kind of stuff, which really need to be resolved in the next one, because the Joy-Con idea doesn't really work. I like the idea of it, but the execution has been pretty poor. I've got fed up replacing Joy-Cons.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, because I think the unfortunate situation we've ended up in here is that if the NVIDIA Tegra line was as fruitful as it could have been, there would have been a new chip right now to just upgrade to. Even if it was a case of not even, adding more performance to the Switch, but making a Nintendo Switch that uses less power so you could have more battery life, maybe just even do small things like making sure there's less performance drops, or you could maybe run 1080p in docked mode because you had some more performance kind of headroom. But because there's not another Tegra chip as a clear upgrade, even for them just lowering the cost of the console, means that we're kind of just stuck with the hardware from 2017, which is not great. That's not saying let's have a Switch Pro. This is saying, in the way that the PS4 and the Xbox One S had more refined versions of AMD silicon, there's not really a refined version or a more refined version they can put on the Nintendo Switch at this point.
Yeah, we're stuck in a corner. We're stuck in a bit of limbo and a bit of corner, and I can see from Nintendo's point of view, there's not really any advantage to them to releasing a Switch 2 at the moment, because they're still selling really well and they still sell loads of games, and why would you chop your own hand off? You just keep milking that cow for everything it's worth and then eventually release a successor to it when you need to. But as gamers, I'd like a new one, please.
Outside of the possibility of a Switch Pro or Switch 2, do you think there's room for another hardware iteration before the end of the Switch life cycle?
I mean, we've talked about this a few times, and I think iteration kind of makes sense for the Switch. It worked for things like the 3DS or the DS. Nintendo has a history of iterations, and I don't see why they couldn't iterate on the Switch. But as you said, the limiting factor kind of is the silicon, because that's kind of all they got to play with. They could increase the memory, I guess, if they really wanted to. They've already released an OLED screen, better battery. It just needs a bit more horsepower, or chuck in a separate discrete GPU that could be meshed with existing system on a chip. They could do that. That could increase its horsepower. It could make it, like as you say, an iteration rather than a replacement. But I just can't see them doing it.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. I think the only things they could really do right now is maybe upgrade the light to an OLED. They could maybe make a Switch XL, but it's just all eating into itself at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's see what they do. But if this rumour is to be believed, we might not be seeing any new Switch replacements or upgrades for, at least a year, if not two. Well, that's a bit of a flat place to end, Anton. And we don't even have a quiz to make me feel better, because you'd be playing against the wall. There's nobody there to quiz against.
1-1. 1-1, we're tied, it's an intense show. I think on that note, wrapping things up, I miss being able to say this. If you want to learn more about how to help us out, you can go to support-us or nsukp.co.uk/support-us to learn all about the Patreon and all the different rewards. And you can contact us on the socials. That's NSUK Podcast. You can email us, podcast@nsukp.co.uk.
And if you come across Mike, you could plead for your life, but he's very small, so I don't think he can really do you much harm. But if he does, just laugh at his face and tell him to get back in his boat. And on that note, thanks very much. Cheerio.
Au revoir.